Hello and welcome to the last episode for AWS Security Month on March 2022. Yes, this is the last episode for the AWS Security Month, and to set some context for today's topic, imagine you have a large, complex, multi-cloud infrastructure, or you just have a growing complexity of you already have a large on-premise environment and now you're moving into cloud. How do you make a list of everything that you're taking care of in terms of the attack surface, the number of servers you have, what kind of information would you be showing in data, what kind of data is being stored in a particular location? Basically, what I'm talking about is asset, and particularly, I'm talking about asset management. This episode, we had Jasmine and George Hank from JupyterOne, who came in and spoke about why asset management is important, why is it complex in cloud, and at what point would you have to consider a paid version versus an open source version? Yes, you don't really have to go for just a spreadsheet. If you know some kind of scripting or automation, you can actually use some open source tools out there to have a graph view of all your assets real time and build some more automation around how often do you update it. So all that and a lot more in this episode. I definitely encourage anyone who's probably looking at maybe updating their existing spreadsheet, which is what they might be using for asset management, or you may be just looking at, I have some complex asset management challenges right now, and how do I go around solving this? So this is probably the episode for you. As always, if you have a friend or a colleague who's trying to solve the asset management problem and probably is looking for a better way to do this instead of maintaining it in a spreadsheet, you probably want them to listen to this episode. And while you're there, make sure you drop us a review or rating because it helps us get discovered by more people. And I truly appreciate your support in spreading the word and helping us grow. And my selfish reason over here is just to help more people. So I appreciate you supporting me with this. And in that return, you also help your friend as well. So it's win-win for everyone. And I will see you in the next episode. Until then, enjoy this episode about asset management and how to scale it. See ya. Peace.
As companies expand to the cloud, asset visibility worsens. The JupyterOne Cyber Asset Management Platform helps you get it back. JupyterOne provides context, understanding, and visibility into your entire cyber asset attack surface with over 150 integrations, including AWS, Google Cloud, Azure, and more. JupyterOne helps you answer complex security and infrastructure questions, understand the contextual relationships between assets, and build the foundation for your security program. Try it for yourself. Get started with your free JupyterOne account today.
Jasmine, if you could start with your intro, and I would love to share what your story is like into the space.
I feel like it is both complicated and boring, which is not great. I'm Jasmine Henry. I'm Field Security Director at JupyterOne, and I feel like I did not intend to be a person who specialized in doing like applied graph stuff at cloud native like software startups, but that's kind of what my career has ended up. And that's great. I started, majored in Russian in undergrad, wanted to get a PhD in Russian, but it was financial crisis of 2008 through several years afterwards. So there was no funding. So I went to help desk. Then I did cloud native development. And then I got a graduate degree in analytics. And then I did security. And then I used JupyterOne to scale security from Series A to C at a different cloud native startup. And now I'm in a role that kind of blends all of this, some applied research.
Yep. Oh, over to you, George.
Yeah, thanks, Ashish. Long-time listener, big fan, so really excited to be here. My name is George Stank. I'm a principal solutions architect at JupyterOne, which means I help our customers be really successful with the platform. But my career also didn't really start in cloud or security. I got an accounting degree, actually. So I was an accountant. I got my CPA. Knew I didn't want to do that 5 or 10 years in, but it just took me a while to figure out what I did want to do. And so a few pivots later, big breaches, went back to grad school, got a degree in cybersecurity. And I've spent about 10 years in different external consulting roles, but this is my first gig at a startup and I'm loving every second. So yeah.
That's awesome. I love the fact that the two folks that I have here, both of you started in non-cybersecurity background, but today you have cybersecurity roles, or at least in the space, which is pretty interesting because it's a slight tangent here. A lot of people would always say that, do I need a cybersecurity degree to get into cybersecurity? But you can always start in accounting, or you can start out learning Russian, and you can always join cybersecurity later on as well. So it's a pretty good example. So thank you for sharing that.
Yeah, there was a point in my kind of early mid-20s when nobody would hire me because I didn't have like specific workplace experience with routers. I was working in cloud that was not considered security at the time. And it's amazing how much things have shifted. I recently spoke with CISO at Uber, and her recommendation to people who want to end up in security is get as many broad experiences as possible. And I feel like that's relevant.
Yep. Yep. So today's topic is all about asset management. I think it's one of the most misunderstood and probably underestimated effort-wise that people think about in the cloud space. Maybe Jasmine, if you can start with, what is asset management cloud and why does one need one in general? Why does it make sense to have one?
Sure. Well, asset inventory is CIS, critical controls 1 and 2. Maintain, not create once a quarter, but maintain an inventory of all hardware and software. And I think that once upon a time, actually, I do have a relevant story here. I had a professor in graduate school who did some work at an automotive company in the US in the late 70s. And his job involved walking around providing support to all of the employees at this automotive manufacturer had a computer. It was about a dozen of them. And so he wore floppy disks on his belt, which at the time, I think it was GM, I don't actually know, they had like 10 computers. Today, the average organization, based on research I just completed, has 32,000 device assets, 90% of which are cloud. Like the scale has changed a lot. The rate at which things change a lot, especially now that computers don't take up an entire room. So it needs to be an active practice that involves compiling data and metadata in real time.
That's pretty awesome. Anything to add, George?
Yeah, I first want to tell you, asset management, the term, it's not sexy. In fact, it sounds...
Wait, do you mean like accounting? Is that like accounting?
Exactly. I just get into the most, exciting spaces, but I actually mean that. I look at asset management really simply. So there's like one question in security that if you can answer perfectly and you can maintain, security, you always have to maintain it. It's never like a final destination. But to me, the question is, what do I have and is it secure? So it's actually two parts. And that question, if you can answer it well, you've done asset management. So I'm sure we'll get into it more, but that's how I look at it.
Actually, that's a good way to put it, because we have a few examples that popped up in recently. Like we had the Log4j in December, just primarily would have been easy for people to pick up and solve if people knew exactly what they were using. But a lot of people had moments where, oh, we don't have a proper asset management. Because I wonder, because why would have those questions come up? So what do people normally do when they don't have something like, I don't know, like an asset management system? Where are they starting? In a piece of paper, or what are they really doing?
I think there's two ways to look at it. Like, I've been an auditor for a long time in previous lives. There's that way, but also just as a security practitioner dealing with a lot of our customers, and the general answer, unfortunately, is incomplete and kind of static or out of date spreadsheets. And that's on like the starting point. And then for companies that are a little bit more resource and technically savvy, there's some homegrown solutions that give them some type of asset listing or visibility for different types of assets. But I think you bring up a good point. Like, what is an asset? We didn't really talk about that. Yeah. You mentioned a couple of incidents. We don't have to name specific incidents, but assets could be open source code components that are used in your product's application code. Assets might even be your third-party vendors that might have access for customer support into your environment. Or maybe assets are just generic, like the generic definition, the old definition is like my computer and the two VMs I spun up to do some testing. But it's everything in between and then a lot more. And yeah, that's my piece.
That's a good point to mention though, because to your point, if people are using spreadsheets, and I wonder if it's also split between different departments as well. So it's not only, say, even though this is a cloud security podcast, but it's the asset management piece is beyond the clouds or cloud security or cybersecurity space as well. There's asset management in accounting, to what we were alluding to earlier. There's asset management in internal IT as well. So if you have service desk, they're doing asset management as well. We're not even accounting for that. Now, as we kind of move forward with the whole Internet of Things and all the other beacon devices that you can come across, in depending on the organization you're in, I'm assuming asset management is not for everything. So asset management, is that only for cloud, or can you just do, like, how broad can we go? Like, how broad an asset can be?
Well, if you were really into some radical math, which might be George, you could probably start trying to like include IP and like organizational wisdom, but that's not really something I've personally done or where I've worked around. But I think that you bring up a really good point, which is that IT asset management, maybe you're scanning in laptops, putting on fixed asset tags, is not the same as asset management. I think that an asset, the simplest definition that I can wrap my head around is that it's something that adds the attack surface. It's data, it's devices, it's networks, it's users, and it's applications, which applications includes code components, open source.
Actually, you know, we're talking about what is it. Like, why is it important, though? Because I keep going back to the whole example, because we've got quite a few listeners over here. I actually don't know how many people actually use asset management. But the place that I'm coming from sounds like a good thing to have. I want to know what I have and what could potentially be adding to my tax. But is this a problem to the point that we're not doing this? What's wrong with spreadsheets?
So there's an ESG stat that's about, I think it's 4 to 5 months old, that says that 70% of companies have experienced consequences due to an unmanaged, undiscovered, or asset that was not in their purview, essentially.
Really? Is the stat out for this as well?
Yeah, I think that there are real consequences that happen often if you're not doing automated asset discovery.
Interesting.
My thoughts are, in the past, it was asset management has always been pretty, like, I've always thought it's kind of foundational. Mm-hmm. I think part of the reason why it's getting more exposure in recent years is because of this move to the cloud. Historically, enterprises, their environments were generally behind a VPN, through a VPN, behind a firewall. There was like kind of a boundary that was understood, and everything inside, you could sniff the wire, scan to identify what all was on the network.
Mm-hmm.
But in the cloud today, especially when you think about companies that give their developers kind of free rein to build, test, whatever, it's just hard to keep track of what is being spun up and down. Assets are really ephemeral and dynamic. Like, you can't like go to a data center and count the racks anymore, unless you're an AWS employee or something. But otherwise, you cannot go count racks. And so these things are being spun up, being used, and they might be left there, or they might disappear after an hour or 30 minutes. So it's really hard to keep track. And that's just when you think about infrastructure. But now you have companies are using hundreds of SaaS applications that have API access to data. And so oftentimes it's both ways, read and write. And then you layer in more and more components. So that's why I think asset management is becoming or getting a little bit more attention. Because ultimately, if you don't know what you have, how can you protect it? And how can you even figure out, is your posture secure, right?
So. Yeah. And to your point, does this mean the challenges for asset management in cloud versus on-premise, what it has been traditionally, are a lot more complex as well? Because to your point, assets could be coming up and down, going, just disappearing in a matter of minutes. And that could also mean if the asset, to Jasmine's point earlier, if it was an asset that is important and adding to your attack surface, someone compromised it, but by the time you got to it, it's already gone away. How do you kind of trace back for whether it existed? Like, is there a lot more complexity in cloud when it comes to asset management than this? That's kind of where a spreadsheet cannot really solve the problem.
Yep, and I feel like you hit on a really interesting concept, which is that an entire asset lifecycle can exist without a human doing anything, like without a human touching anything, without a human deploying, tearing it down, like in the case of many scenarios, including auto scaling groups.
Yeah.
I think that if you're scanning in laptops, if it's something that you're touching to you know, deploy this asset, you might be okay with manual. If not, like, automation is the first and last resort.
And so any other complexity that comes with going into cloud? Because I feel like it's the scale would be a challenge as well, because I can only imagine spreadsheet just going, what, 10,000 rows, 16,000 rows? And if there are assets coming up and down, and you're trying to maintain a record of all of them, but then you keep removing them, adding them, like, what does asset management at scale look like?
Asset automation at scale looks like API interconnectivity and bringing a system of record together for all the disparate toolings, technologies, and platforms that are provisioned in a general enterprise organization. So, like, you think about the corporate IT team, they have their stack of tooling. You think about the cloud infrastructure team, the developers, the security team. Like when you start thinking about it, there's dozens, hundreds of tools that could each serve as their own source of truth. Like maybe Jamf is the source of truth for the MacBooks and maybe AWS for the cloud infrastructure. There's dozens and dozens of these tools. When you think about scale, the dynamic ephemeralness and how a lot of these assets are defined by code, like Jasmine said, you can't touch a lot of it. Yeah, a system of record to a platform that brings in all these sources of truth together via automation through APIs is how I see the future.
Fair enough. And so that kind of accounts for the fact that whether something is already present or was present for a few minutes versus something that's basically long living, it's at least able to capture all of those. So you have a complete picture. And maybe, and to your point, you can probably extend that to internal IT as well.
Yeah. And the part, like, since you brought up spreadsheets again, it's the part that these APIs and these platforms allow us to do is once you configure it, like you just set up how frequently you want the data, the assets refresh. Like we don't have to ask George or Jasmine to update the spreadsheet quarterly with the latest and greatest export from the software.
And you can actually use the talent of Jasmine and George for the real things instead of just maintaining spreadsheet.
Ostensibly, yes, but no, I do not do manual asset inventory. I feel like there's a few good decisions I've made in my life, just a small handful. One of them was putting automated asset inventory in place as one of like the first three things I did when I created a security program.
Yeah, I wonder, it's the automated asset inventory is an interesting one because I don't know how many people are even open to the idea. Because do you find that when you talk to different people, is asset management done by cybersecurity for the assets that are attacked can add to the attack surface? Who is looking at this normally?
My case, it was security plus compliance privacy. It was also DevOps. And I was starting to get pretty good at kind of surfacing certain things from assets for executives through dashboards. How many instances do we have in Europe? Because that is a GDPR posture question. Which of our developer identities like are approving their own code commits? Because a great asset inventory system will show the relationships between misconfigurations, events, assets, and those are the sorts of things that executives actually care about, not 35 radar charts that show your feelings on risk, which I've definitely stayed up all night making.
Because that makes me think of a question then. So since you're talking about compliance, then would a lot of people have a compliance requirement for asset management? Is that what drives this?
There is, like Jasmine mentioned, CIS, HITRUST, and a few other like compliance regimes or standards, frameworks, whatever synonym you want to use, actually require an asset inventory. But historically, like most companies don't truly have real-time automated asset inventory that really captures a comprehensive view of their assets. They'll generally like show auditor spreadsheets and it'll be enough to suffice, get the rubber stamp to move on. But from a compliance perspective, like in the past, how auditing usually works is if I come in to audit you, I'm going to ask you to ask your team to generate a static point in time dump of all of your databases and servers. I'm going to point my finger at like 25% of them. And then you take those 25% I selected and you bug your engineers to capture screenshots showing that the servers and the disks are encrypted or whatever the requirement is. And nobody likes that. You don't like that. Like your engineers definitely don't like it. And even the auditor doesn't like it. So we have a real opportunity here with technology now, with these modern asset management inventorying tools to have not only like a holistic, comprehensive view, but to move from what compliance was for 50 years, which is a once a year exercise. Everyone gets nervous the week before the auditor comes, you sweat, and when the auditor closes their door, you're like, phew, don't have to see that guy for another year. We can move into continuous monitoring. Your environments are changing. By the time we finish this conversation, at a normal modern enterprise software company, dozens, hundreds of merges and deploys into production. Like that environment is not static. So the next year when that auditor comes back, when I come back, what is this audit that we're doing? Like, does that even make sense?
So. Yeah. Actually, you raised a good point as well there, because as you kind of go through the audit exercise itself, a lot of times, people are going through multiple spreadsheets, multiple people that you interact with, just to get the real-time view of this. And to what you were saying as well, having the ability to challenge the norm that was, hey, I just ask you for a screenshot or snapshot of these 20 boxes. And just 20 boxes may have been there for 20 years, but there were all these other hidden boxes that probably would never see the day of light in those audit as well, because they're just well hidden. And you don't even share that in the view that nowadays you're screen sharing, because everything's online. But maybe you just have a window which is just a partial view of the whole thing, not the whole thing as well. So if there is an opportunity here to challenge compliance, because I obviously want to get into the bit of a tooling side of thing as well. Like, so in terms of, I guess, we know what is an asset. We know why asset is important. We also know asset management platforms are probably a good idea as well for someone to consider, especially if you want to know things like, hey, if Log4j was to happen again, I probably at least have a real-time list of where possibly I could have had
dependencies and packages.
Perfect. Yes. So it's not just the fact that my first introduction to asset management the years ago now, in a spreadsheet was basically, hey, we use AWS, it wasn't AWS, it was more like we use IBM, we use this data center thing, we have some other software. It was just literally a list of the application itself, or if it's like a application we bought, but that was it. We would never go into the whole, what's it called, what language is being used or whatever it is. Because I wonder the introduction of SBOM that's coming up.
I actually have a trivia question for you, Ashish, if you're willing to play. Oh, what percentage of code assets in an organization do you think are third party versus homegrown?
I would say a lot more third party than, so if I were to put a number to it, I can't really put a number. I would probably even say 60% would be third party. 40%, actually, maybe I'll reverse this. 60% is third party, remaining 30% is code and libraries written by other people, and then 10% probably is what you're actually writing. That makes sense?
Actually, you're pretty close. So 8% is homegrown.
Really? 8%?
Yes. Yep. Yep. So there is really significant third party exposure. I was actually recently cracking up because my CISO's analogy, it involves piles of horse manure, but he's like, we cannot actually solve this problem. We can only manage it with things like SBOMs and with asset inventory solutions, with knowledge graphs that allow you to understand relationships and dependencies. Yeah. And then I think also two other things that help but don't solve it: vendor consolidation. Turn off a legacy system if it no longer serves you. Yeah. Like, that really takes up a lot of security time.
With all the last couple of years, the events involving whether you want to, I call it security of the software supply chain, and the Linux Foundation, the Cloud Native Computing Foundation, I like their four C's that they define when you think about the cloud. You have to secure the actual cloud infrastructure, and then you worry about like clusters that workloads are running on, the security of the containers, and then lastly, the code that's running. So like the four C's, and that's, I think, a really nice way to look at when you consider what an asset is. It's all of those things and then some: your SaaS applications, your endpoints, your users, all of that stuff.
So now, since you kind of highlighted the fact that, okay, asset management is challenging, complex, and probably not a great idea to start continue doing it on a spreadsheet. Is there, like, for people who, we've been talking about automation for some time as well, is there like some open source tooling, or what do people normally use for want to go automate stuff? Because I know we, on Cloud Security News, we recently covered, I think, the open source tool from Jupyter One, Stargaze, I want to say.
Starbase.
I was on the money.
Really close, yeah.
That was like a pretty cool release as well, because you kind of had like graphical view of what assets could be like. So what's the role these kind of tools would play in an asset management context? And when do people go for paid tools versus just using open source?
I'm a realist, as somebody who spent a lot of time working at startups that do not have infinite budget. I think that open source is certainly a very valid approach. And I also think that you can use open source to kind of validate like a use case or grow into maybe where you eventually want to be. There is a lot of good open source tools. Thank you for the shout out to Starbase. There is GraphQL, there's Sparkle, there's Neo4j. You essentially need the ability. You need a graph data model so you can classify assets and you can classify their relationships, and you need a query language. That is the two things you need, and you can find it from several different open source products.
So a query language, what was the other one?
You need a graph data model.
Okay, and a combination of that is a great start to an asset management. The beginning.
Well, there's a third element, which is you need to be compiling data and metadata on assets.
Right.
So okay, you compile the data, you classify it with the data model, and then you use the query language to query it.
Okay. So why a graph model? Why not a database?
Okay, so I have strong opinions on this. I think that security problems now are actually, we're really dealing with search problems that are, it's a matter of analytics. And so Google used knowledge graphs, which are a semantic model that's been around since the 70s, to classify new types of data and discover new relationships in real time. And that is how Google can refer you to a restaurant that two blocks away that just opened up if you're looking for a place to eat. And I think that we need to scale that model to security, like it's tested. And we have the same issue where we need to be adding new asset types and understanding relationships and not, you know, reinventing the wheel every time we have a new asset type added. We need to be fitting it into a data model.
So would it be the same knowledge graph model that's applied in cybersecurity as well then?
Yep. And within social media networks, not the exact same model, but
it's the essence of it. Yeah, yep. So maybe the skeleton of it can actually help. So, and this is just me curiosity from an algorithm perspective. So a knowledge graph would be, in a cybersecurity context, would help you identify your attack surface endpoints, like things like that could be potentially taken over, and how do they relate to each other? Would that be a good example for what a knowledge graph can give you?
Exactly. Yep. It classifies the assets and it classifies the relationship types, which a relationship is not necessarily negative or positive, but combinations of relationship, like a asset that is critical and it is also like misconfigured and it's also related to like people who shouldn't be accessing it. Like that is an actual risk that you should probably be worried about.
Sounds like it should be a team inside cybersecurity, or at least for an individual looking at this on an ongoing basis, building that graph. Because it sounds like a great idea, but I don't know, is that not an individual thing, or is that just basically I'm just gonna make this open source and leave it? What do you see in the industry normally?
So we've been harping a lot on like, what is an asset? Why is it important to know what your assets are and how they're configured, where they live, who owned them, whatever. We have a very biased view. We also believe that it's just as important to understand those relationships that exist between your assets. So I think it goes back to Microsoft distinguished engineer, John Lambert, maybe. There's a saying that defenders think in lists, like spreadsheets, tables, and attackers think in graphs. Because if you think about when someone is trying to find a way into an enterprise environment, there's that attack surface that we talked about. That's that posture from an enterprise perspective is so broad. Like there's so many possible weak links. If someone manages to get a foothold in any one of those like possible points on the posture, they're going to think, where can they laterally, horizontally, vertically pivot to? It's not always just like a straight shot to the database that has the customer's credit card information. It's like the hops aren't always lateral. You might have to, you know, make some weird zigzaggy journey through the system as you figure out what you can take advantage of in terms of privilege escalation or whatnot. So ultimately, understanding these relationships, for example, in AWS, like knowing what IAM policies I have is great. Knowing what permissions those policies allow to what resources is great, but we need to know like which roles, which users, which groups can assume those policies and use those permissions, and like what resources can they possibly have read admin access to. So that's why we believe relationships are so important. But ultimately, back to the open source question, there's a ton of tools. Jasmine rattled off a ton. And I know the idea of like, we're talking about, oh, assets are, you know, so broadly defined. It's so many things to consider. I think starting from somewhere is great. You don't need 100% visibility day one, hour two. It's you slowly build, add in more sources of data, more systems of sources of truth. And ultimately, it's like just like security. It's an ever-growing, ever-continuing like journey where hopefully, if you zoom out enough, the progress is positive.
Yeah. And to your point then, if you have built a solution like that, whether you use open source, but at what point do people have to go for a paid solution? Like, is there a tipping point after which, or are they normally just happy with open source tools and go, oh, I think this has solved my problem? I'm just curious.
With the engineers, you can get really, really far with open source. So I think it's really pretty individual. I'm going to put in our chat here, Ashish, I've got a list of, I don't know, pretty comprehensive list of open source resources some of which are our companies, but they're open source, and then really great other projects as well.
Awesome. I will definitely share that in the show notes as well later on as well for people to join in. Awesome. Thank you for the sharing that. Also, oh yeah, the cartography from Lyft is, that's pretty cool as well. I've actually heard that before. So the interesting point then becomes, okay, so if you have the skill set in your team, you can probably go a long way with open source asset management if you really want to. So flicking that back onto asset management automation, it's individual to the company to kind of do automation, but we kind of come back to the scale thing again, because I feel like with the cloud space that we are kind of focused on, this kind of where primarily the audience is as well, you can start building an asset management graph using open source or paid solution. As you kind of going through that process, you find an accountability partner as well for, hey, these assets are managed by, I don't know, Ashish manages this really weird looking software over here, which is just happens to be, I don't know, haven't been used for 30 years, but we just have to maintain it because this is one particular thing that this thing does. So we might have examples of those as well. So accountability, I feel, is an important part as well. Scaling graph, is there anything else people should think about when scaling assets management, apart from the fact that, oh, I've got everything. I've got my old softwares, new softwares. Mm-hmm. I've got my cloud beacons. I've got my accountability sorted. I've got a graph that looks pretty sexy enough that I'm going to go, okay, this answers all my questions, even if I was an attacker or a defender. Anything else people should be thinking about with building an asset management system that is for the modern cloud world?
I feel like the question that really interests me personally, selfishly, is once you've got all this data in this graph, how do you surface what's actually interesting and relevant? The research I'm going to be doing next is going to be an attempt to figure out how well anomaly detection scales to cloud, which I suspect is not very well, because I think that cloud is a lot more chaotic.
Do you find anomaly detection is easier if we are able to do asset management? Because then you get to go know the behavior of, hey, these are how the assets are behaving, and the anomaly to it, I'm assuming it's a storing database, but is that easier if you have an asset management system for doing anomaly detection?
I can personally attest that in a real world environment, the asset management system gave significantly more actionable results than other tools, such as this certificate is going to expire in 30 days. Yep, I want to act on that, versus not pointing fingers. But maybe some cloud threat systems can be total black boxes and yell at you 300 times an hour.
Yep, that I've seen that as well. Any other thoughts on this, George?
The question you asked, I look at it the other direction. I just don't have enough experience to speak as to how having an asset management platform or good governance over your assets may or may not increase anomaly detection. But I will tell you the inverse. The classic story is like, hey, we use a really fancy SIM tool that fires a bajillion alerts, and a lot of it's noisy. A lot of it's noisy because it's like false positives or low priority stuff. But even when something important or seemingly worth looking into comes in, maybe it's an IP, maybe it's a FQDN, a MAC address, a host, whatever, at companies that you're talking about, there are so many teams, it is a humongous struggle to figure out who should I go talk to about this identifier that triggered on my alerting system.
Yeah.
It takes folks hours, maybe days, to go hunt down the developer or the team and to even figure out where this asset belongs. And so when you mentioned accountability, that's a big thing for me. It's if you can, like, tag your assets at the source when you spin them up. But yeah, those are my thoughts. I don't know about if the increase in anomaly detection. I will tell you, though, the anomaly detection is meaningless if you can't act on it. Like, you can bring all the signals in the world to somebody, but people have limited working hours. They have to prioritize what they look at.
Maybe a good follow-up question to kind of bring this home would be, like, we have spoken about asset management, but what are some of the different maturity level? We obviously have open source solution that we can use. And to Jasmine's point, you can take it all the way and have an amazing viewpoint of what assets are and how we can probably manage them. But what is like a maturity model for this? What's the level one, and then what would be level 5, level 10 kind of a thing for asset management?
I know Jasmine has a do you have thoughts on this?
I really appreciate the fact just very deeply that you asked about a model, because then I went and thought about it. I don't know that it's there though. So I really want George to argue with me. Level one, know what you have in real time. Maybe that's actually level two, because not everybody gets to level one. Majority of people don't get to level one. So know what you have in real time. Level two would be like achieve not only the principle, but the spirit of like the CIS controls, where you know what you have in real time and some things about it. Who does it belong to? How critical is it? Would probably be a big one there. Level three would probably be apply a graph model or some sort of other mechanism to understand relationships and dependencies. What is this vulnerable code library actually impact? Being able to trace that. And then level four would be just being so perfect that your developers always tag assets at the time of creation. You have a like just gorgeous SBOM that's like on your website. You're really surfacing insights well from asset management to executives, and they like are looking every day to see how's your attack surface changing. But if anybody ever gets there, let me know.
I'm not going to blame anyone over here, but I know exactly a few companies that I've seen in the past as well, where to your point, level one itself has never happened. It's updated like a week before to what George is saying, a week before the audit, and like, oh, we should, like, what's the updated list? Because it's maintained a week before the auditor comes in. And probably people forget about the moment the auditor leaves until the next audit comes in. But anything to add, George?
I think Jasmine hit pretty much all of it. I would just, the only thing I would add is if we ever get there, and this is, or if folks ever get to the point where they feel really comfortable knowing everything and anything they have at any given moment in time, whatever framework your company adopts, whether it's CIS, critical controls, whether it's NIST CSF, whether it's NIST 853, whatever it is, then you start applying these requirements or like standards across your assets. So one example is whatever framework you decide to go with, you choose it. You also are able to enumerate at any given point the 400,000 S3 buckets you have. Then you start looking at the actual S3 buckets to see if they're secure and configured to the best practices. Do I have encryption at rest? Are my bucket object policies set the way, et cetera, et cetera. But ultimately this is a journey. And so I don't want to understate that progress is what we're going after, not perfection.
That's a good point.
Progress, but I also have a philosophical question. Should maturity models be curve adjusted to where we are? Like, should level one always be a level three, or no? Like, should we maintain our standards?
I kind of come from my mindset that people should always, there's always one level up you can go for. And that's just me thinking about everything in life. I feel like there's always a, oh yeah, we've been doing this, because we're taking the cloud example as well. Even they keep evolving every day. You would always feel as a CISO, I always feel, I may feel I'm level three, level four now.
Yeah.
But I wouldn't be surprised if just as I keep like finish this conversation and someone has created something which I have no idea about, and I don't find out about it until tomorrow or whenever the scan runs.
Yeah. Well, I'm a firm believer that some security, which sometimes the way that you can do some security is by doing some compliance. Like it is better than nothing. It is not all or nothing. A little bit is better than nothing.
Maybe that's why they added in the compliance standard, because they realized people were not even caring about it. They're like, well, if you make it a compliance standard, people will start at least making a spreadsheet out of it.
Well, yeah, PCI DSS literally says it is intended to be bare minimum.
There you go. We don't want to put too much pressure on you guys. Just maintain a spreadsheet. Just at least do that much. Maybe it's a good point for us to go towards the tail end of it. I thank you so much for coming on the show. I really appreciate the information that you folks have shared, and at least highlighted the importance of why asset management is something people should be considering. And thank you for hanging out, everyone who's listening in as well. For people who wants to connect with you, maybe after this and talk a bit more about asset management, where can they find you folks? Hey, Jasmine, if you want to go first.
You can reach me at jasmine.henry@jupiter1.com. I'm on Twitter at jasminehenry10.
Awesome. Thank you. I'll put them in the show notes as well. What about you, George? Where can people find you?
I prefer LinkedIn. So just linkedin.com/George Tang. Email works, george.tang@jupiter1.com.
I'll share the links for all of them. That's all for today. And I will see the remaining audience next week. We are starting the Cloud Native Security Month. And for everyone else, enjoy a great weekend. See ya. Peace. Thank you for listening to that episode of Cloud Security Podcast. If you found some new information from that episode, we would appreciate if you share it with others. Share it with us as well if you have any good feedback or good learnings from the episode. We are on all your favorite podcast platforms. If you don't find us there, you can always go on our website, www.cloudsecuritypodcast.tv, to listen to the latest episode. We appreciate your support in helping us grow. It helps us bring more guests. It helps us support the channel. So really appreciate it. Thank you so much for your time, and talk to you on the next episode.